Good morning and welcome to Mornings with a Stranger, episode 69. No, I haven't forgotten about you or this or whatever. My plans for episode 69 sort of took a turn. And, well, let's just say this. If I ever do a Kickstarter, perhaps I will put out a, like, for $10,000 adding to my Kickstarter, you can have dinner with me and I'll tell you why I didn't do episode 69 the way I wanted to. Why not, right? And I'll potentially freely take a $10,000 donation anyway, if you'd like to know the answer. I'm not sure that I'll accept it, but I'll think about it. Then, in my process, I ended up getting tied into a few work projects that had me straying from my morning's path. And then the universe gifted me with this. Quote, "How are we supposed to get anything done with these perverted saplings waving around their stamens with no regard to decency?" That is a quote from the article, "Mike Pence, horrified by DC cherry trees flagrantly displaying their reproductive organs." And yes, of course, although I don't think "of course" really is appropriate here, this is an article from The Onion, so of course it's a fake quote. But I have to say that when I first saw the article, I didn't see it from The Onion right away. And it was just like, oh, I just rolled my eyes like, oh, here we go. On one hand, duh, it's obviously fake. On the other hand, if you grew up in the household I did, nah, not necessarily so much. The article itself is, I don't know, cute or funny or a little bit of a lot of things, perhaps. But it basically ends with, "Pence is comforted by discovering that the administration's environmental policies will soon end the tree's licentious behavior," which, again, sad and good humor. We must laugh, I guess, at the situation if we can't all just fix it. On a side note, it always is curious if we have to laugh at these things, because are we laughing at them while we're trying to fix them? Because some people think we're just laughing at them when things get really bad as a replacement of doing anything about it and just accepting it. And I guess that certainly makes for an easy life until it isn't anymore, for us to bury our heads in the sand. But I don't know. I suppose it's a personal choice thing. Do you laugh and then go fix or try to help or try to support? Or do you laugh and go, ah, not my problem. Politics, not my issue. And I don't love politics, but we do have to face the fact that it does sort of affect our lives, whether we want to deal with it or not. I can respect the desire not to. It's, you know, one's trying to survive in their own life, but you can't ignore that. It's kind of a place of privilege to ignore that none of these things have any effect on us. Anyway, that's a complete side note from where I was even thinking of going. Anyway, this article got me thinking in just the fact that my first response was not the instant thought that, well, this is clearly an Onion article or a fake. I think of the household I grew up. I grew up with parents that were quite a bit older than me and definitely old school and not highly educated. And so didn't have the capacity to talk about things. And again, were spending most of their life trying to figure out how to get through day by day, that they didn't necessarily have the time, the capacity, or the will to learn about a lot of stuff, and grew up in a religious capacity as well. So the whole idea of this article just really got me thinking about the dangers of what is good. Like, what? I guess I'm thinking of my mother, who is no longer with us. If she had really processed in a discussion, and probably did at some point in her life, maybe, but if she had really processed the whole concept of the similarities between the plants and human sexuality and all of that, like just the real, I think she might have had the, if it explained to her in that way, in that direct correlation, that she may have had a bit of a kind of a squicky feel about it, and having the, you know, if you would have gone outside and started talking about things that way, it would have disturbed her. So, and I kind of know that from things that did get discussed and how that did disturb her, and the concept of reproduction and talking about things in any real language, you know, was very uncomfortable and very wrong. and would turn to anger and you know, frustration, and not to talk about these things. It's not appropriate. And I think of how the bar has moved over time. Like, we still have some of that. You know, I think of a person that I know who's talking about their child for whom they had used appropriate language, improper descriptive language, of calling the vagina, and whatever the case was, all the bits and pieces. And then the kid had an accident and fell and, you know, yelled very much in public, you know, I hurt my vagina. And how even the people who taught her the right things had that moment of, you know, is this embarrassing or is it not? And I think I've, you know, heard that type of story from many people. Then it sort of faces you, and do you kind of look at it in that moment of, you know, you're kind of like, hey, she's speaking the right thing. She's being able to describe whatever it is that is happening in proper language. And that's kind of cool. But then you look at the faces around you, like, and they're not comfortable with that. And they think I'm weird and horrible. And it's so strange to me, like, how we've created this discomfort in our culture. And it's a created discomfort that when we use proper words for things or descriptive things, that it carries so much weight and so much discomfort. And I think of, I mean, I know people who are highly educated who are still, you know, kind of still like seeing these pieces of our culture still bothering them, or like they're still questioning when is it appropriate, when is it not, even in their own space, in their own house, and then kind of look at it logically and go, this is kind of ridiculous. But it's so ingrained in us, and it's like, I don't think it's, I don't know, you know, is it a naturally ingrained thing? Like, what is nurture? What is nature? And I guess I would think that obviously, well, I don't know if obviously plays in there, but I guess I would think that it is more of a cultural thing to have those feelings. They're attached to words, they're attached to concepts. And how do we, you know, I mean, I think we've tried to get over some of that, and we clearly have. I mean, there are certainly people of an older generation who are much more able and completely able and open to talk about things that they, as younger people, weren't able to talk about, but reason through the, this is ridiculous, you know. It, you know, it holds us down as a society. It holds us down from communicating with each other. It holds us down in relationships, in, you know, dating, in communicating with our children, in encouraging our children to learn. I don't know. It's funny because I occasionally hear parents and people out and about using just weird words for things. And I don't, like, for instance, the word penis. It's not really a great word. Like, we totally could use a whole new word for that. But pee-pee, it just sounds so, it's more embarrassing to me to hear some kid or parent use the word pee-pee than penis. I don't know why. That, for some reason, pee-pee is just, bugs me. And it's also weird that we're more comfortable with kids pointing to their private parts rather than having them actually call them words. It's like, I was thinking about that too, and I was thinking of watching a kid have a conversation where, again, they had hurt themselves and they couldn't say words that they hadn't been taught. And so they were pointing, you know, at their labia, vagina, the down there girl parts that we don't really have another good word for girls. And I'm thinking, you know, for both boys and girls, I've seen this happen. And I'm thinking, okay, we get really mad at Michael Jackson when he grabs himself, but we want our kids to point at themselves, which is fine. They should be able to point at what's hurting or what the problem is. But it's interesting that pointing is okay to override actual language. We would rather them point at their, in the grocery store, we'd rather them point at their vagina than say, I hurt my vagina, or I hurt my labia, or whatever. And I can't help but just think of how many mixed messages this sends us when we're talking to our kids. Use real words. But that, don't use those real words. Oh my God, that's going to send us into, you know, the end of the world kind of things. It's got to be confusing. I mean, it is confusing. I was a kid. I remember how confusing it was. You were supposed to talk about stuff, but when you did, you got in trouble, and you asked questions about the wrong thing, you got in trouble. We need so desperately to acknowledge this disconnect in our culture and raising our kids. And You know, and I don't know what the answer is. And I think we're kind of trying to figure that out in discussion and even pointing out things like this article of this sort of dissonance that, and when I think of the article, and I realize it's a fake article, but the reality behind it is very true. You know, God has made these beautiful creations and God has made sex and God has made humans, but don't talk about it. Be really careful about that because somehow we've decided that that's all disrespectful and it's a way of controlling people and it's a, and we know that it doesn't work. Like all of this doesn't work. See how many people who, you know, speak about their faith and family values and then we find out they have mistresses and abortions and all of that that goes with it. It's high, you know, what isn't it? Christian men are the ones who use more pornography than anybody else. So when you're talking about what is, and I'm speaking of what's defined as right within that religion, it's not working. So can we loosen up the language a little more so we can at least discuss and be in reality? I know when a friend of mine who was Catholic was getting married, she was doing a lot of research on premarital sex and looking at the stats from years and years ago to now and basically saying, yeah, the amount of premarital sex, apparently, from what she found, hadn't really changed from years ago to now. And, you know, I don't know. I mean, I can argue that if you're going to have a religion, you shouldn't fit the religion to the people. If the religion is a, if it is a truth of which we cannot know, if it is a truth, then that is the guidelines of the truth we should be living in. But again, we have to face the fact of a lot of other things. And people don't live in the truth of their religion. If you're a fundamentalist, I mean, come on, you just don't. How many people are out stoning their kids when they won't marry their child rapist or whatever the case might be? And I'm kind of down with that, just so we're really, really clear. It's just the concept of if you're going to believe in a religion and you don't actually believe in the religion that you say you believe in, it makes things very complicated for the rest of us. And even for the rest of us who want to support you in your religious beliefs. So I've gone way far afield from the concept I had in my head about language, which I have sort of stated. So I will end here because this is very long and I've touched a lot of topics, but and a lot of stream of consciousness because that's how this whole gig works. Anyway, thank you for listening. I am really not trying to offend Christians out there or people of various religions. I really, it's more about thinking and understanding why some people who are in a particular religion, for instance, might be challenged. And again, that is not where I started this conversation. I'm just ending it there. But to finish my thought, and who knows if this reaches anybody, and I talk about Christianity because it's the thing that I know about the most. It's what I grew up in. It's where my experience comes from. And I acknowledge that we all have our certain hypocrisies, but sometimes there are reasons for hypocrisies in life and in the way we do things. So sometimes it's a deeper understanding. But where sometimes people feel criticized about their faith is situations like, I am a Christian. I do not believe in premarital sex, but I will have anal sex. And that's a really hard thing for people to swallow. It's a great song Garfunkel and Oates do about loophole. You know, it's fascinating to think about the fact that somehow the pocket of the vagina is the place where God happens and where God will judge you. We don't like gays, but we're going to have anal sex with our girlfriends. I'm just saying you have to understand that that type of thing and many others like it have people curious and questioning and kind of going, okay, Val, if that's a loophole, if that you're willing to bite that bullet, what other bullets are you willing to bite? And how far does that go? And why does it go that far? So anyway, all right. have a wonderful day. Thank you for listening. And I'm, you know, again, I'm really not trying to offend anybody. These are conversations that are interesting to have, and I love to talk to people who will have them because I'm interested in learning from people who are very faithful, and rather than just being criticized about saying something, but understanding what I'm trying to say and being able to understand and respond my questions that I've had all my life and still waiting for answers for. Have a wonderful day. Thank you very much for listening. Check out the rest of the podcasts at morningswithastranger.com. And you can also find on Facebook at Mornings with a Stranger, no spaces. @MorningsWithAStranger. Okay, I'll get it right. See, I'm a little out of practice. Have a really great day. Take care.